listening to CFAC 960 AM, Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Live from Calgary, Alberta, Canada. Owned and operated by Rogers Media. Also streaming at sportsnet.ca/960. Talking football in the afternoon. This is The Big Show on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Week 2 of the CFL kicked off yesterday. Big win for the Hamilton Tiger Cats over the big win for the Hamilton Tiger Cats over the Winnipeg Blue Bombers. Week 2 continues tonight with a 5:30 kickoff with the Calgary Stampeders and Montreal Alouettes. Every day, 3 o'clock on Fridays, Arash Madani, our Sportsnet CFL insider, joins us, and we've had 5 games so far in the CFL season. We have 5 quarterbacks who have gone down with serious injuries, including Drew Willey of the Winnipeg Blue Bombers last night. That was very, very unfortunate and very, very scary. Arash joined us earlier today and started by giving us an official update as to Drew Willey's status.
Well, officially, Pat, no. I mean, they're calling it day-to-day. I mean, he's continuing to be evaluated, and not until Monday will the Bombers have an official announcement. I think in large part it's a couple of things. One, they want to go through all the proper protocols to make sure Willie's okay, that it's not just a concussion. And the other is to see what the league's decision is going to be on any kind of supplemental discipline and, you know, what they're going to do moving forward. I suspect on Monday we're going to find out that, you know, the Bombers have been very cryptic in their new regime with this whole hockey upper body, lower body injury stuff. But I'll also suspect that they will announce that he did suffer a concussion, Drew Willey. And that was scary. That was one of the scarier things you're going to see when a quarterback gets shattered like that, helmet to helmet, and lays on the turf for quite some time.
And again, just one of the CFL's brightest stars, and it was helmet to helmet. It was Hamilton's Adrian Tracy who knocked him down. This is the kind of stuff that for years now we've been talking about. They need to get this stuff out of football, and different rules have been instituted to try and get it out. So what gives here? I mean, how come another helmet to helmet hit?
Well, look, there's a couple of concerns here. One, there was no flag thrown on the play, which is, you know, mind-boggling. This is the stuff the NFL has been trying to get out of its game. I was in touch with a trainer in the CFL today. He was just blown away that there was no flag. This on the heels of no flag being thrown on the Dan Lefebvre injury, which appeared to be helmet-to-helmet, and then later a fine came out. So are we protecting the quarterbacks or are we not? And through 2 weeks, Pat, it doesn't appear that's the case. Then the play itself. So Taylor Reed has Willie locked up. He basically has him in the grasp. Awfully close to calling it a sack. I understand why the officials didn't. Truthfully, man, I don't blame Adrian Tracy. I don't think Adrian Tracy went into that play during that play wanting to launch himself at the quarterback. And let's remember where the Ticats were in this situation. Tracy was playing week 2 because the starter, Eric Norwood, is on the 6-game injured. The guy who replaced Norwood last week was Sam Scott, a kid they'd released, brought back, and then sat this week. Tracy's going full bore because he's trying to earn a job, win a job, stay employed. And, you know, things happen very fast, etc. But for that to happen, for the launch to happen, for the helmet-to-helmet to happen, and no flag be thrown, Pat, that's beyond irresponsible.
Yeah, I don't understand how there was no flat. Like, I get it, things happen, it's a rough sport, you're never going to be totally able to eliminate anything.
Right.
But how is a flag not thrown on that play? That's the one that I don't understand. Like, it was
blatant. And then, meanwhile, there were over 300 yards of penalty flags thrown last night.
Yeah.
And down goes a franchise quarterback, and nothing.
Yeah. It's incredible to me. And I mean, for Winnipeg, I mean, Brian Brohm comes in, tough spot for him to come into, but doesn't play all that well. And all of a sudden, Hamilton's putting up 52 points on the Bombers. Brian Brohm, I mean, look, Brian Brohm's a former high-end quarterback in NCAA Div 1 football at Louisville and you know, has seen time in the NFL as well. It's not like we're talking about a guy who isn't accomplished. So what do we think? What do we know about Brian Brohm in terms of him being the guy while Willie's out?
Well, that's the resume, and he's also got a CFL resume. He was in Hamilton, ironically enough, before he came to Winnipeg. I was actually speaking to somebody last night who was in the quarterback's room with the Tiger Cats when Brom was there, and Brom kind of, you know, flippantly one day said, "I haven't gotten better since high school." And then you kind of watch two pick sixes happen. You're like, yeah, you don't say. But Michael Shea, the head coach of the Bombers, was not pleased with how the team responded when Brom came in. It almost felt like, you know, you're going to get this. There's going to be a deflating moment. All the shoulders are going to slump. But he felt it felt like maybe the team was using that as an excuse to not play. The defense got torched again in particular. The offense was really out of whack. So moving forward, it's going to be Brom's show. The reason why Robert Marv got in for very few plays is because Brom takes not only the number two snaps in practice, but O'Shea said, look, moving ahead, we don't know when we're going to get Drew Willey back. We have to make sure this guy can go out there and do as well as he can, evaluate, and, you know, make sure he's going to be ready for week three if need be. So I have a hard time believing they're going to start Marv, you know, week three, Pat. To me, this is going to be Brian Brom's show for at least a game if Willie can't go. And that's the other thing. I mean, there's two things with the Willie injury. One, you hope he's okay. But two, you hope they don't rush this thing. You know, this is so beyond football with everything that we know with brain injuries and CTE and the long-term effects and the damage and all that kind of stuff. Let's just take, you know, hopefully they put the brakes on a little bit. I get they're hosting a Grey Cup this year, but there's a little more than just a football season on the line here.
Arash Madani's with us. He is our CFL insider, joins us every Friday here on Sportsnet 960, The Fan. So the quarterback storyline has been the one that has dominated so far throughout the regular season. There's no unknown in Saskatchewan. We know about Kevin Glenn. This is what he does. But you do have some intel on Matt Nichols, who's going to be taking over from Mike Riley in Edmonton.
Yeah, I made some calls this week, Pat, for this segment. And I wanted to talk to former teammates of Matt Nichols. You know, the Eskimos have a bye week this week. And you never really get the full story with present teammates because they're just going to say the right things. So I talked to a couple of guys who played with him in the past when Nichols was a starter there. And I said, you know, what do you get with this guy? And the prevailing sentiment was, first and foremost, he's a confident dude. Right? He may not have the same skill set as Mike Riley, but he's not going to go in there scared, which is a huge part of this thing. Because when you're a quarterback, you have to have the confidence, the belief to check out of things at the line of scrimmage if you don't like what you see. So Nichols, I've been told, you know, by some former teammates, he's not your normal backup that's scared to do that or afraid to make a mistake. And you don't have to shrink the playbook all that much. He knows what's out there. He knows how to execute it. Is he mobile? Yes. Is he Mike Riley with his feet? No, but that's okay too. Does he have a rocket launcher? Well, no, but he's got the gunslinger mentality, and he likes to throw the ball. So when you have a dude who's not scared, who's going to be willing to run the offense and check out of things, and you know, the biggest advantage is that he's a confident guy who's going to go out there and won't feel like a backup. You may just be okay.
Yeah. And I've always liked the way Nichols has played. I mean, again, he's not explosive. He's not necessarily as dynamic as Riley, but man, he's an accurate passer. And I think that he moves the ball between the 20s nicely. And, you know, if he can get a little bit more confidence, I think he can start punching some things in from the red zone too.
Well, the biggest thing too is their run game needs to improve from week one. Let's remember, they lost John White. He tore his Achilles in camp. And so now you have Chad Simpson back there. So offensively, and this is the other issue the Eskimos are facing right now, offensively, and I know it's easy to say, take a Darius Bowman out of the mix, what's left, but take a Darius Bowman out of the mix, what's left? And, you know, from a game breaker standpoint, from a guy who can change a game standpoint, they need a little bit more there. So we'll see if somebody can emerge. A lot of the emphasis, and this is what you'd expect from an Eskimos team with the GM and head coach they have, is on the defensive side of the football. I think they're going to make a shuffling of the deck on their offensive line. I think interior-wise, they got to get better. But yeah, they need to improve in a number of areas, and it's not just because of the quarterback.
What's happening in Montreal? Stamps and Alouettes tonight. Do we have any idea who's starting at quarterback for the Owls tonight?
Well, they've apparently told the team, and everyone's keeping it very hush hush. I wasn't able to I wasn't able to get to the bottom of it, Pat, but I think we're going to see Brandon Bridge, the Canadian. I think we're going to see Rakeem Keto, who's the backup. And I think what we're going to see is a very limited playbook for both of those guys. I mean, they split reps in practice throughout the week. This is not the entire playbook that Jonathan Crompton was running towards the end of last season, throughout, you know, the preseason. And, you know, ultimately, the reason why Montreal really didn't go bring in a name guy is because there aren't a lot of name guys left out there. You know, Saskatchewan went and brought back Tino Cinceri, but, you know, from in terms of quarterbacks on the street, somebody made the joke to me, hey, the two best quarterbacks in the organization are the receivers coach and the running backs coach, Calvillo and Dinwiddie. So they're going to go out there with two inexperienced guys, and I'm assuming we're going to see gadget plays. I think they're going to throw everything in the kitchen sink out there, from end-arounds and reverses and wanting to run the football. You know, Tyrell Sutton, this is the time you want Brandon Whitaker, right? And Brandon Whitaker is in Toronto.
Yeah.
So I'm intrigued to see from an offensive call sheet standpoint just how many different kind of bells and whistles we're going to see from Turk Schoenert calling the plays today.
And on the other side, you were making the point about the Stampeders, and we know how well they've done in terms of the Canadian draft, and because of that,
they
can make up a pretty conventional roster, whereas because other teams maybe don't draft as well as Calgary, they kind of have to do some less conventional and more experimental things with their ratio, right?
Well, look, what do we know Canadian players to be? We know them to be line of scrimmage guys, right? So now the trend has become with many teams, they go with two American offensive linemen. The Stamps just have the conventional one, the left tackle, and the other four offensive linemen are Canadian. You know, Edwin Harrison's the left tackle, Fetterfield's on the right side, their draft picks are in the middle. Then you have the defensive line, where it's Quinn Smith, their draft pick from Concordia, you know, Junior Turner from the great Bishop's University Gators program. And so six of your starters, and you only have to start seven Canadians, six of them are right there on the line of scrimmage. And you look at it, and it's in large part because of how well they draft. And so, you know, one of the reasons, and we talked about this the other day, one of the reasons you're seeing so many Americans on offensive lines is because you don't want to pay for vets to be around. But because the Stamps have been able to bring guys through the system so effectively, they can lose a Canadian here or there, just the way they lost the Jones kid to the New York Giants, and the show goes on. And that's what's happened there. I don't want to get too inside baseball on this, but that's the makeup of how you use your Canadians is just so integral to how your football team works.
Just a few more with Arash Madani every Friday as our Sportsnet CFL insider. Red Blacks pulled out a really, really exciting win in week one. So they're 1-0. They have their first ever road win in franchise history. And they're here's maybe the most important thing. They're one of the few teams that has a healthy quarterback. They take on the BC Lions, who for now have a healthy quarterback. We don't know how he's going to play in his first regular season action since week 11 of the last year. What can we expect from the Red Blacks and their home opener against BC tonight?
Well, here's what intrigues me, Pat, is the Jock Sanders, who was the Stamps in training camp, the Red Blacks signed him. They obviously have Chris Williams that they gave all that money to in the offseason. They've activated Sanders right away. So from a special team standpoint, you know who your returner is. How will Jock Sanders be used, you know, in space and trying to free him up to do things, and how much of a special teams threat may he be? Two, they activate Malik Jackson, the American linebacker. So that gives them some depth there that they really haven't had since trading Jasper Simmons to the Stamps. Here's what I've been told in Ottawa, though. Yeah, they got that win over Montreal last week, and everybody was excited. They were a little too excited, not just that night, but throughout the week. You know, you haven't done anything yet. And one of the things about an expansion team, especially after coming off a two-win season, is you have to instill a culture and you have to change a culture. And you have to change a culture with a lot of guys that a lot of teams didn't want. That just winning a football game isn't enough. You got to go win the next one and the next one and improve and get better. And so they're learning these things. And, you know, that in part is why this year on their coaching staff, they brought a couple of veteran coaches who used to be players to try and teach that, have the guys learn that. and you got to walk before you run. And these guys are going to have to learn that just a road win is one step on the journey. You haven't accomplished anything yet. And as an organization, some of these young players still have to grasp that. So it'll be interesting to see from a personnel standpoint how that all shakes down, and then ultimately how they handle a little bit of success and then some more adversity.
A final thought for you, my friend. This pass interference thing is certainly going to be with us for a while longer. We saw Mike O'Shea of the Bombers challenge what should have been PI. There is no overturn. Then on the other side, Kent Austin loses it on the sidelines when the Tiger Cats are nailed for one. Why does this remain so contentious?
Well, it's because, look, there's just so much change going on in such a short period of time, Pat. And it almost feels as if a lot of people don't know how this is going to shake down. Then you get into a game situation, you're like, what's happening here? I was told in the rules committee meeting, it was an 8-1 approval on reviewing pass interference. And then when it came to the offensive PI, well, publicly they said they wanted to get defensive cleaned up before attaching offensive. There was actually the conversation came up, should we review offensive PI on touchdowns? And nobody really wanted to say or deal with anything here. We talked about it earlier. When you have more than 300 yards in penalties in a game, that's not good for anybody. It disrupts the flow. It's choppy. It's stop and start. And the PI thing is so subjective because by letter of the law, by rule, almost every play is PI. After 5 yards, the ball in the air, any kind of contact, pass interference. So how can you call, you know, when there's contact, it's got to be PI, and it wasn't. And so if you're going to, you know, review something that's subjective, it has to be black or white. And it hasn't been. And that's where the frustration is. And that's why going back to the rules committee, everyone was so excited to pass this 8-1, except didn't realize how it was going to actually be executed on the field. And now the way it's being, you know, executed on the field is not making anybody content with what, you know, was approved back in the spring.
You're the man, as always, Arash. Twice this week we had you on, but there's a lot going on in the Canadian Football League right now. Appreciate it, pal. We'll talk to you next week.
Yeah, brother.
Arash Madani, he's our Sportsnet CFL insider every Friday at 3 o'clock here on The Big Show on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Stampeders play Week 2 action tonight. 5:30 kickoffs, about 2 hours away in Montreal. The Stamps 1-0, looking to move to 2-0. They'll take on the Alouettes. We still don't know exactly who's starting at quarterback for the Owls. We think it's going to be Brandon Bridge, but that isn't even confirmed as of yet. Lots more to get to as we continue along on this Friday edition of The Big Show. Happy 2015 Calgary Stampede. The Buffalo Sabres are focus around the corner as we focus back in on the National Hockey League because, man, have they been busy. The Flames have been busy since Friday, since the Buffalo Sabres got to the draft floor in Florida. They have acquired a number one center via trade. They've drafted a potential other number one center, and that was kind of them just getting started. The news today, an evolution of the Ryan O'Reilly trade by about 100. Joe Yurden of NHL.com covers the Sabres. He's going to join us around the corner. Let me get to the bottom of what exactly this contract is all about. Next on The Big Show. This is Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
On the air at 960 on the AM dial. Streaming live at sportsnet.ca/960. We cover sports all summer long. Sportsnet 960 The Fan. On the NHL beat, it's The Big Show. Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
A couple of big signings today in the National Hockey League by teams that, well, acquired the players. One in Buffalo, we're going to get to that in a second, and Columbus signing Brendan Saad. But news coming out of San Jose, Joel Ward now off the marketplace, the Sharks signing the veteran forward to a 3-year contract. Sometimes in this province, you might forget that there was actually two teams that went through major overhauls here this year. The Edmonton Oilers, of course, Connor McDavid, but the team right behind him, the Buffalo Sabres, got a pretty good pickup in Jack Eichel, but they weren't done there. The Sabres went out and got Robin Lehner. They went out and made a big deal with Colorado, and they got the rights to Ryan O'Reilly, who, darn it, probably should have been a Flame at one point, but that never happened. Very pleased that Joe Yurden from NHL.com can join us to talk about the Sabres. Joe, thanks for doing this. It seems like, much like in the province of Alberta, it's never dull around Buffalo these days.
Hasn't been dull here in about 2 years, I'd say. The hockey hasn't been great, but it's been anything other than boring, that's for sure.
The deal for Ryan O'Reilly, a 7-year contract, well, that makes sense. He's a young center. Everybody needs a young number one center. But it's really the term and the way this contract plays itself out. There's a lot of people that have raised eyebrows. Do you have raised eyebrows about this deal?
Only in that I haven't really seen another contract like that. Only David Clarkson's is similar, and that's probably not the name you really want to go throwing around like you just gave a 7-year deal to. But, yeah, going $1 million a year and then getting bonuses thrown in every July 1st, it's definitely a different kind of deal for him. But, some folks were getting upset about the $7.5 million annual value for it, and I get that. I mean, he's only had a career high, I think, of 60 points, and had a 17 gold last year, and that's not really the kind of money you throw around for a guy like that. But at the same point, Calgary kind of helped make that happen.
Yeah.
by that offer sheet being worth $6.5 million in the last season. So it's one of those things where you're never going to be able to negotiate down from that point. So the talking starts at 6.5 and it just goes up from there. So going to 7.5, and especially after the story out of Denver was that he wanted $8 million per, maybe the Sabres got a bit of a break on this one, 1 year shorter and $1.5 million less per year.
Can you help me? I mean, I'm no CBA expert, and I don't want to insinuate that you are, but the escrow component to this, the fact that it's $1 million salary with bonuses, I see conflicting information. Early on, I was led to believe that bonuses aren't subject to escrow. Now I'm seeing they are. Do you have a handle on that?
I've been trying to look around on that. From what I understood before, bonuses didn't apply to that. I mean, maybe that's something that got changed after the last lockout, where they were just looking for ways to kind of dance around this kind of thing happening. I'm not totally sure. I'm gonna have to get my fine tooth comb and get back through the CBA to see if there's something in there about that.
Because nothing's better than summer reading of the CBA. and I guess the other part of this is the fact that is interesting from a Buffalo standpoint. If they ever got to a point this falls apart, the buyout would become really interesting, because again, we don't think the bonuses come into play in a buyout, do they?
No, I don't think they do, and I think that's part of the reason why the deal is done that way. And you want to, when you're a player, you want to kind of protect your interests, and you don't want to get bought out. You don't want to have that kind of thing happen. And crazy stuff can happen, and things can fall apart. But if this contract makes it so that buying somebody out in the later years makes it almost impossible, hey, kudos to them. I mean, team doesn't have to sign that kind of contract. They can just tell them to go take a hike, but at the same point, you want the player, you want to keep him around, and sometimes you have to do things a little bit different to make sure it happens. And, in this case, that sure seems to be that way. I mean, I don't think Terry Pegula is going to mind, writing up a few extra big checks every July 1st for the next 7 years.
Joe Yerden from NHL.com. We're talking about the Buffalo Sabres, our guest here on the Big Show. Pat?
So let's focus in on the ice here with Ryan O'Reilly. We're expecting him to be, he's their number one center next year. Is that right?
That's what Dan Bylsma said over the weekend, although I wonder what the competition is going to be like with Jack Eichel for that spot. I mean, the way I look at it is, Eichel's going to be great. He's going to be a great one. Why haggle about, which guy's going to be your number one center at this point? In that respect, it's a wealth of riches. It's like, flip a coin, put him on the first line, and let him go.
So where are we on Jack Eichel right now? Like, have we determined that he's not going back to college? We know that for sure.
Oh yeah, he signed his entry level deal. That means he can't go back to college. And should things go for the absolute worst, he would have to, if he's not going to make it in Buffalo, he'd have to play junior hockey. But I would imagine that the only way that happens is if he shows up to camp weighing 300 pounds, can't skate, and suddenly can't lift his arms above his head to lift the stick.
Yeah, and I totally forgot that he signed his entry-level deal on Wednesday because he's a college player. That so depth-wise at center, O'Reilly, Eichel, Tyler Ennis plays center, and Sam Reinhart's still in this picture too. So how do we view this center ice depth chart right now for Buffalo?
Well, I would say right now, Ennis is, you can put Ennis down as a right wing now.
Okay.
He hasn't played center in maybe 2.5, 3 years at this point. He played on the right side on the top line last year, and most, I believe, all of last season, or 2 seasons ago as well. So that settles that. But you're looking O'Reilly, pencil in O'Reilly as the number one center. I'd say Eichel is the number two. I would go as Dengus Girgensson as the third center, and then David Legwand on the fourth line. And then maybe you have Sam Reinhart start on the right wing, or, I mean, there's a possibility he starts in the AHL as well. But I think that's where things start out right now. But, you know, training camp, things can get moved around all over the place. Reinhart played a little bit at right wing when he played the final three AHL games of the season last year. So he got a little taste of it. I think he's got to get a bit more of a taste of it during development camp and again in training camp.
How much is Reinhart? Because here we are with O'Reilly being signed and acquired and Eichel being drafted first overall. Has Reinhart in a lot of ways almost gotten lost in the shuffle?
In a way he has, but I think for him, this is going to help keep the spotlight off of him. I think he got a lot of the view last year where, you know, he plays 9 games. He didn't look like he fit into the NHL in those games. He looked a lot better in the AHL in the end of last season. And obviously, during, you know, with Kootenay and during the World Junior Tournament, he looked fantastic. So I think there's a hope that he's going to build off of what he learned last year and just kind of come into camp and maybe even fly under the radar, because everybody's going to be paying attention to O'Reilly and to Eichel, and that he's going to just be doing his thing. I mean, people are going to be keeping an eye out for him because they want him, fans want him in the NHL. But if he starts the year in the AHL, I don't think it's a killer. But I think for him, it's a great thing because he's going to be able to do what he needs to do. And, you know, when you're in the middle of a camp and you're learning new systems and everything, I mean, everybody's going to be doing that. But for somebody who's so young, I mean, it works out. I think it's going to work out even better for him because the pressure isn't totally there for him. And, you know, I know if he gets sent to Rochester to start the season, then people are going to look at it, you know, disappointingly. But, I mean, the way the Sabres have rebuilt things this summer, it's very possible they could do that. And it's a completely comfortable move because of his minutes. He'll be able to get his time in against, you know, older guys and, you know, playing against men and not kids. And, you know, it just let it roll from there and let him develop.
Joe Yerden from NHL.com joining us here on the Big Show. We're talking about the Buffalo Sabres. And we've talked about the middle. We've talked about up front. Tell me about the back end. Robin Lehner's a big pickup. We know that they went out and got Josh Georges last year. They, you know, did the big deal with Winnipeg. But what's that back end, the defensive side of the Sabres, shaping up to be this fall?
Well, I don't think Tim Murray's done there. I think he's got a lot more work to get done because right now it's the weakness, to be perfectly honest. I mean, you're looking at Georges, Zach Bogosian, Rasmus Ristolainen as probably your three solid guys in the lineup. And then from there, it gets a little different. You know, they signed Carlo Koliakovo today. You have Mike Weber. You have youngster Jake McCabe, who's another guy that they're super high on. And you also have Mark Pesek. So you have Pesek. I think he probably slots in as the fourth guy right now. But they need help on the left side. And the left side, you know, a left-handed shot anyways. Dan Bylsma said he's comfortable putting left-handed guys on the right side and right-handed guys on the left side. So I take that for what it's worth. But they need somebody who's a little bit more steady as a lefty shot. You know, you trade away Zadorov to get O'Reilly, and that opens that up. But it's a weakness. They need a top-four type player. Yesterday, basically. They've got the rest of the summer to get this figured out. And I have to assume that it's going to come via trade because, you know, Johnny Oduya is probably the last big name out there, and it sounds like he wants to stay in Chicago, provided the cap situation plays out right. So whether or not Buffalo's in that mix, I mean, I assume that Murray's talking with him, but, you know, it might be out of their hands if he just wants to stay in Chicago. But they've got to get that figured out because defensively it's a bit of a jumble. And, you know, the last thing you want to do is have your forwards in place then on defense to keep up with everybody else.
Joe, how are they selling this team? I mean, what's this year supposed to be? The last couple have been terrible. We know that. And now they've added a lot. Are they, you know, limiting expectations? Are they trying to tamper expectations? Or are they trying to set the bar high? I know it's July, but there's got to be a feeling of where they're going.
Well, Tim Murray's been playing it very cool. You know, he flat out refuses to say that playoffs are within reach for this upcoming season. I don't think they are either. You know, Dan Bylsma said that, you know, he's very happy. He thinks they improved greatly during draft weekend. And I think he realized that, you know, by saying things like that, you set the bar maybe a little bit too high right off the bat. But I think people are excited about things being better than they have been the last 2 years. I mean, it's almost impossible for them to go worse. And I know that's inviting all sorts of cosmic karma to come down and change that. But you look at it with the guys you're going to have out there. You're going to have Evander Kane. You're going to have Jack Eichel. You're going to have Ryan O'Reilly. You're going to have Tyler Ennis, who, you know, was finally starting to get noticed by people last year as a brilliant offensive player. You know, Matt Molson's not going to have another terrible season the way he did last year. And it's a team where things are going to improve. Things are going to be better. They're going to be very young. I mean, this is a ridiculously young team. And from building off of that, I mean, you can throw the labels on it all you want to, but it's going to be better hockey. You know, Dan Bylsma and Ted Nolan can be more polar opposite in their styles of hockey. And I think for the fans, that's, you know, it's based around Eichel. It's based around Reinhardt. It's based around Kane. Based around all these guys where, you know, you're expecting them to be better and things to be better. But I, as far as where they want them to be, as long as they're not finished last in the East and they're not, you know, the top three lottery team, I think that's, you know, that's the basic improvement. But I think if they're in the running for a playoff spot, you get, you know, maybe into February and they're hanging around, you know, 8, 9, 10, cool. But if you finish 11th or 12th, I think it's still a success.
Joe, really appreciate this. I know it's a busy day, and as I said before, never dull around Buffalo. Thanks for joining us. Really appreciate the perspective.
Absolutely. Happy to do it.
Thanks, Joe. Joe Yurden from NHL.com. I can tell you, Pat, that it is possible that I have been reading out of the wrong hymn book. John Shannon from Sportsnet is adamant that escrow does count against the bonuses.
Now, you're not the only one that, like, I had read the same thing. There were numerous things.
Well,
Joe
said he's trying to get to the bottom of it, too. So,
but, I mean, John's a pretty...
I don't think, I don't think he's just talking off the top of his head.
No.
Here. So, because, and if that's the case, Pat, then, you know, we're back to DEFCON 2 or 3. Because
it's still really helpful for the Sabres in a buyout situation, though.
And I very much so in that. Yeah.
The NHL still looks into it because I think anyway, because I don't.
But
think,
if this was a, you know,
like, are we sure that bonuses count only on salary? Like, are we sure about that, too? Like, I'm fairly certain, but,
you know, the problem is you apply certain logic from previous CBAs, and this one is a new CBA. And part of it, too, is, you know, as somebody pointed out earlier, David Clarkson has a similar deal. Well, if David Clarkson was circumventing escrow, as we think or thought that O'Reilly was, then everybody else would be doing it.
Yeah.
Because, again, that's my immediate, you know, Joel Ward just signed in San Jose. You don't think he's going to San Jose? Oh, give me $1 million and bonus me the rest of it. That makes sense. So my apologies. My information was flawed. I take responsibility for that. And it seems, according to John Shannon from Sportsnet, that the escrow component that is really one of the things that would really benefit the player in this case, he does have to pay it on the bonus. Now, what becomes really interesting is this date, because I believe since he signed the contract, his bonus payment is this date every year. So he gets a big, healthy check for the next 7 years.
Happy July 3rd every year. Here's millions of dollars for you. You get to win the lottery every year.
Wow. Joe Yurden, Sportsnet 960. You sound so sexy. Did you see that on Twitter?
Who said that?
No, the sports drama girl sent Joe a note. I didn't. He sounded informative. He sounded fun.
I thought he sounded sexy.
Did
you? I'm comfortable enough in my in my manliness that I can say a man sounds sexy.
I got it. All right.
This is an interesting Sabres team going forward. Like they Gergensen's is there.
Yep.
Reinhardt's knocking on the door.
Yep.
Eichel enters the fray, signing his entry-level deal. O'Reilly now. You know, you have Ennis, you have Jamie McGinn, it's Marcus Foligno. Like, it's a very interesting team. And Evander Kane, they've got, like, the forward ranks look like they're going in the right direction right now.
They do. And I've
the rest, said, there's still some work to do.
Yeah, I've said this a couple of times, that it was interesting at the draft that there was, I wouldn't call it consensus, but it was as if the conversation was, well, Edmonton's done everything right. Well, look at Buffalo. Oh, no, no, Buffalo, they're just jamming pieces together. They tried jamming pieces together last year. They brought in Gionta. They brought in Georges. It didn't work. And I found it weird that there was almost this consensus that, well, Edmonton's going down the right path. Buffalo's kind of stuck in the mud. And I don't see it that way. And I really don't think it's Edmonton versus Buffalo. But I think there's a lot of people that are going to be looking at them for the next couple of years. You know, if there's big gap or separation between Buffalo and where Edmonton goes, clearly won't look good for Buffalo. And God forbid the Sabres rocket ahead of where the Oilers are going to be.
Yeah, it won't look good for Edmonton at all.
Right.
I mean, because you have the number one and two pick, so there's always going to be that McDavid-Eichel thing. You know, is it going to be, I certainly hope for Buffalo's sake that it's not the same. And no knock on Bobby Ryan, but the gap between Crosby and Ryan on that, yeah, it's a pretty sizable gap right now. Ryan's a good player. Mm-hmm. He's a bona fide NHLer, probably a top-line winger. But Sidney Crosby's the best player in the game. You know, you're hoping that it's not as big a gap between McDavid and Eichel. The Sabres certainly hoping that. But, yeah, I don't agree with the, like, is it jamming pieces together? Well, can you really say that when you acquire a 24-year-old center, a 23-year-old winger, a 23-year-old goaltender? Like, those are the type of moves that teams want to make, whether you're the Sabres or anybody else.
And that's what I was thinking. But and again, you know, this is, it's one of those things that, look, when you get a player like Connor McDavid, we talked about this earlier. My God, Sportsnet put his ice time at the prospects camp on TV today. Yeah. There was 4,000 people. Went to Rexall to watch this. It's a big deal. I get that. But Buffalo, I think, has been very sneaky. I think they've done a lot of things. And
you know, I like what they've done. I think they're significantly better.
And you forget the Buffalo-Winnipeg trade because Kane never played, right?
Yeah.
You know,
Kane
they,
is yet to play.
And they got a pretty good defenseman.
Bogosian's a good little player.
Yeah. So I like it. We mentioned it before. We should probably follow up on it. The San Jose Sharks have signed a free agent. They've got Joel Ward, formerly of the Washington Capitals, a 3-year deal. Ward, 34 years old.
That old, hey?
Yeah.
Would not have guessed that.
The dollar figure, I don't know. Does the dollar figure jump off at you? I've got it here. It's 3.275 AAV.
I mean, it's nice for Ward. It's a nice little payday for him.
But where's San Jose going?
I don't know.
Because they get Paul Martin.
I really don't know where they're
veteran
going.
Defenseman. And they get Martin Jones, a really young goalie.
Yeah.
They've got Couture and Pavelski, but those guys are getting long in the tooth.
Yeah, Pavelski's 30.
Yeah.
Couture's at least 26, so there's still lots there, but Pavelski's 30.
I was far more excited about Hurdle a year ago, not so much after last year. Mm-hmm. Mirko Mueller, defensemen take a while, so I'm not down on him.
Melker Carlson's 24, an all right year, I guess.
All right, yeah.
A couple of big goals.
But they're not sitting on a Sam Reinhart.
No, they're not. Right now, it's not like they're poised to break us. Oh, just watch out because player A, B, and C are ready to, you know, make an impact at the NHL level.
I don't believe for a second that the problem was the coach. I just believe they grew apart. You know, simple as that.
It was time to move on, I think, on both sides. It didn't seem like there was a huge appetite for Todd to come back in San Jose as much as there was an appetite for San Jose to move on, too. What Doug Wilson's doing at this point, I don't really know. I don't know if he's buying himself time. I don't know if he's got an organizational edict that he has to follow. I don't know what Doug Wilson's doing anymore. For the longest time, it looked like the Sharks team had a direction. Now it looks like they're entering the stage that the Calgary Flames were 4 or 5 years ago. It looks like they don't know what they are.
Yeah, and that no man's land, right?
This false sense of what they are, and I think it's completely wrong. Thornton's 36. Marlowe's 35. Pavelski's 30. Like, even Marc-Edouard Vlasic is moving into, you know, the prime of his career. He's 28. They bring in a 34-year-old Paul Martin. Brent Burns is 30. This is not a young team.
And they're older today than they were yesterday.
Yeah.
He's got to be on Wilson, doesn't it? Coach is gone now, so you can't.
Well, now that's the last bullet in your chamber. Okay, you've made the coaching change.
Yep.
You've brought in, a very good coach in Pete DeBoer. I think that's a very, very good coach. But now you've got to, now it's time. Like, you either have to, I think Doug Wilson could be looking at his final season as general manager of the Sharks.
So, you think Pete DeBoer is an excellent coach or a good coach? Or I think he's a great guy, and I think he's a good coach.
I think he's a pretty good coach. I think that you know,
I think he's one failed San Jose experiment away from not getting a job for a while.
Could be, and yet I liked a lot of what he did in New Jersey. I mean,
that's true. You know what? I'll backtrack a little bit. I'll take back a little bit of what I've said, because you do have to take that in consideration. When you run, when you coach in New Jersey, you really are at the kind of the beck and call of Lou Lamoriello and what he gives you.
And
right?
Didn't give him much. I mean, after they, like, they were way over their heads getting to the Stanley Cup final. They get there, they lose in six, and they haven't been to the playoffs since. And yet, you know, the lockout year, he actually had them pretty close to the playoffs, and I thought they were way over their head that year. And then the last 2 years, I guess he got fired midway through this past year. So the last year and a half, there was nothing to work with there. It was kind of tough to do anything. I kind of think that he's a pretty good coach, and I think that for a team that is looking to, I like Todd McClellan a lot. I have the Oilers hit the jackpot in a lot of ways by bringing him in, but I think Peter DeBoer is a good replacement for him in San Jose.
Yeah. I just don't trust the GM.
At this point, I think he's moving towards last legs territory. If they disappoint again this year, if they are a team that's destined to miss the playoffs, if they're five games below 500 in January or something like that, I wouldn't be surprised if Doug Wilson is relieved at some point this coming year. Because the expectations in that town and the way that team has performed in the regular season for so long, for them to be a non-playoff team last year, that was significant. They don't miss the playoffs in San Jose. They don't do a lot in the playoffs, but they don't miss the playoffs in San Jose. And they missed last year.
Big test for the crowds, because it's a good market. You know, I won't question the market. It's a good crowd, usually sold out and pretty loud. But you wonder, how are they going to deal with, you know, a downturn? Now, it's happened in the past. I mean, Daryl Sutter's year, when they fired Daryl Sutter, they didn't make the playoffs and they bounced back. This is a team that, you know, traditionally is a playoff team every year. It's going to be tough in the West.
After missing the playoffs this year, that was the first time since that year that they missed the playoffs. And before, they've only missed the playoffs twice since 1997. Like, it's something that doesn't happen. They get to the playoffs every year.
Yeah, and there's only a handful of teams, Detroit being one of them, that's got a better run than that, right?
Yeah, they missed 2002-03, and they missed this year.
But they got nothing to show for it.
Yeah. I don't really see them being, like, I don't think they're a playoff team next year. I don't look at them and say, oh, watch out for the Sharks. I think the Kings have got a better chance of bouncing back than the Sharks do. I think the Kings' core and where they are right now, even though they lost Sakara, they lost Jones, but I look at the Kings as a much better candidate to bounce back next year than San Jose.
Absolutely. I think that, you know, it's, again, you begin today, and which we learned was a useless process, which is in July starting to pencil in your playoff teams. But if you were going to do that useless thing, they're probably in over top of some teams that made it this year.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, for instance, I was asked to do this yesterday, and I stupidly did.
Oh.
I've got three Pacific Division teams right now making the playoffs. I have Anaheim, I have Los Angeles, and I have Calgary. I don't have San Jose. I don't have Vancouver. I think Edmonton's going to be closer, but I don't think it's tough to say, oh, they're definitely a playoff team next year. And I certainly don't have Arizona. And I've got five teams in the Central making it, because I still think that's where the balance of power lies right now.
As I said yesterday, I think the one thing that will be, I agree with your premise on all of that. I just wonder about the impact of who's going to be the doormat, because there was a couple of doormats last year, free spaces on the bingo cards that filled up some points. And we saw, you know, teams with big point totals and how tight it was. I wonder if
If you're Calgary and you don't take care of your games against Arizona and Edmonton, you know,
which they did last year, right?
They swept the Oilers. And they sweep the Oilers? Yeah, they went 5-for-5 against the Oilers. I don't think they lost to Edmonton last year. And did they lose to Arizona?
I don't think they did.
Yeah, they went 10-for-10 against those two. So those are your free spaces. Calgary's, that's 20 points. They're not in the playoffs if they don't do that.
Right. And a more competitive Arizona team, more competitive Edmonton team. And I guess the flip side is I don't see San Jose falling off a cliff.
I don't see Vancouver falling off a cliff. I think Vancouver's not as good. I think San Jose is not great, but I don't know if there are those awful teams this year because the two awful Western Conference teams last year have seemingly gotten better.
About 90 minutes away from kickoff week two for the Calgary Stampeders. They're in Montreal. They face an Alouettes team that obviously has some issues at quarterback. They see Nick Lewis for the first time. Haven't talked an awful lot about that. It's weird, really weird for me seeing Nick Lewis in another uniform. Don't know how impactful Nick will be for the Alouettes, but you know if there's any juice left in the tank, this is the one game he's going to be amped up for.
Yeah, much like John Cornish is amped up to take on Montreal. Yeah, Nick Lewis, absolutely. Lewis actually led the way receiving for Montreal in their loss to Ottawa, 4 for 46. Now, he didn't catch a touchdown. It wasn't a great game passing-wise because Crompton got hurt, and it was kind of a bit of a dog's breakfast after that. Lefevre got hurt. So, you know, you have Nick Lewis as your leading receiver at 46 yards. I think we might see him be a little bit more of a factor. And the fact that, you know, they've got S.J. Green there, the fact that S.J. Green is still a fairly dominant receiver,
yep,
I think opens up Nick for a couple of things. So I wouldn't be surprised if Lewis catches a couple of important balls tonight. And yeah, it's bizarre to me seeing 82 in that jersey. It's weird.
Most important thing tonight, quarterback's got to stay healthy.
Yeah.
Quarterbacks have got to stay healthy. All right, coming up in the 4 o'clock hour, we'll bring you some headlines. We'll head to Washington, another Metro Division team that's...
By the way, he's not even wearing... I know he's not wearing 82 in Montreal, but I refer to Nick as... I think he's wearing 8 in Montreal. It's bizarre seeing him.
I knew what
eight.
You meant. Who didn't know what you mean?
I just wanted to... Because there's always the wizard.
No,
I just refer to Nick as 82 because that's what he always wore here.
Dude, if anybody should be anybody... If anybody's angry at anybody today, it's everybody angry at me for making a big deal out of something that apparently isn't a big deal. And that's, you know, non-escrow bonuses.
You took responsibility.
I'd take responsibility for it. You know what? We'd jump on grenades. That's the name of this program, Grenade Jumping.
The Grenade Show.
The Grenade Show. Why don't we have a balloon? That's really the most important question that came out of today's program.
We advertise on balloons.
But why we own a balloon, apparently. Why aren't we in that balloon as we speak?
I don't think we own the balloon.
Coming up in the 4 o'clock hour, up and away we go with headlines. Alex Pruitt from the Washington Post will talk about the Capitals. And you know him and you love him as number 22 or 24. Get into that number. The assistant general manager of the Calgary Flames. And this has got to be a kick in the junk for him. I mean, all we do is, Connie, what's going on? Tell us what's going on. We need something. Connie. Dude gets an extension 4 days ago. Nobody calls him. We'll make up for that. Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
We talked to your boss. It's totally okay to stream Sportsnet 960 all day and night on your work computer. In fact, it's new company policy. Sportsnet.ca/960.
The Big Show, brought to you by Comedy Cave. If it's comedy you crave, come to the Cave. Tickets are always $10. Comedy's so good, you'll whip out your funny bone. Go to ComedyCave.com.